Let us pray together using the printed words for our prayer for illumination. The Lord be with you. God of every time, these ancient words have guided your people. Help us hear them ring louder today to point the way to you and to teach us to love again. We pray using the strength of your Spirit in us. The First Testament lesson this morning is found in the book of Micah, chapter 6, verses 6 to 8. You may follow this along in your pew Bible in the Old Testament, page 866, if you wish. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. The word of the Lord.
So I realize your bulletins say that I'm going to be reading from Peter, but I changed my mind. So I'm going to be reading from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 4, starting at verse 35. This is on page 39 of your New Testament. Let us hear what God is saying to the church today. On that day, when evening had come, Jesus said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with them. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, and so the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" The word of God. In seminary, they taught us a sermon writing schedule that took 4 days. On Monday, you read and reflect. On Tuesday, you research. On Wednesday, you begin writing, and on Thursday, you finish and polish. Since graduating from seminary, I have followed that structure once this week. But then Governor Whitmer gave a press conference about the COVID-19 virus and the response she wanted Michigan to take. Michigan State University and the University of Michigan moved all classes online and told students to go home. And then local schools closed for 2 weeks. Our world changed. And the message I had for once in my life not procrastinated to write did not make much sense anymore. I had to start all over on Thursday. We got into a boat on Monday thinking that it would be a normal trip across the week. And now we find ourselves in the middle of a windstorm. The past few days for me have felt like someone is slowly turning up the dial of my anxiety. I wake up optimistic and refreshed. But as the day goes on, a tightness begins to grow in my chest. I flip-flop between thinking this is all an overreaction And we have to act swiftly and completely. One article tells me that the situation is going to be more wild than we can ever imagine, and then the TV tells me that we have everything under control. The speed and intensity of the competing claims makes me feel like I have emotional whiplash. I've gone to bed at night exhausted and unsure and frankly afraid. The disciples in our second lesson today are in a panic too. Their boat trip has turned into a nightmare. The sea that is well known for its sudden, terrifying storms doesn't need much description for the audience to understand the danger the disciples are in. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat against the boat so that the boat was already being swamped. Metaphorically, sounds a lot like our week. Fear takes hold of the disciples as they all respond in their own way. Some grab the ropes and begin helping the crew. Some grab the ropes and tie themselves to the boat to save themselves. And some assess if they think they can jump and make it to shore. At least that's how I imagine their responses to be. In this chaos, someone spots Jesus at the back, asleep. In great fear, they rush and fiercely shake Jesus awake, screaming, "Aren't you afraid we're all going to die?" Jesus calmly sits up, looks at the wind, looks at the water, and looks at the disciples. To the wind, he motions to be quiet. To the water, he whispers, "Peace." And to the disciples, he asks, "What are you afraid of?" Jesus always asks the best questions. He does not say, "Do not be afraid." He knows their fear is based in a powerful reality. Jesus does not think that fear is a problem. It's okay to be afraid. What Jesus is asking them to do, though, is pinpoint where their fear is located. That's what Jesus does when he wakes up. He sees the wind is a bit too loud, and he tells it to shush. The sea is a bit wild, and so he tells it to be still. Jesus identifies where his fear is located and finds a way that he can manage and take control. Because Jesus does this so quickly, he doesn't even look like he's afraid. And the disciples are in awe of his calm presence. Jesus wants the disciples to be able to respond in this way too. The first step is to identify what they are afraid of. If they're afraid that the boat will capsize, then the next time they get into a boat, they need to assess if they think the boat will handle a storm and if they trust the captain to make good choices. I would venture to say that Jesus made these assessments before he got into this boat because he is resting very well. He must have been confident in the boat's soundness and the captain's ability. If the disciples can identify concretely what they are afraid of, then they can find if there's anything they can do to control, to lessen, or eliminate their fear. Fear is the signal that something needs to be changed. Jesus knows that fear is helpful in this way, so he does not reprimand them for feeling fearful, but he also knows that sitting in our fear in the chaos and panic is not helpful as well. He wants them to find a way to take action. Action is the vaccine to fear. Jesus wants them to name their fear specifically, then find a way to improve the situation. Jesus then asks them if they have any faith, which I always get a little offended when Jesus asks the disciple this, because I think, these are your guys, Jesus. Why do you have to keep calling them out on their faith? They obviously believe in you. But what this question does, even in its slight offense, is to force the disciples to answer unequivocally, "We do have faith." At which point they realize that they didn't engage their faith in the crisis. It's hard to remember to engage our faith because the net around us gets gunked up. Remember how I said I wake up refreshed and go to bed anxious? That is my net getting more and more weighed down by the news and decisions and interactions. At the end of the day, there's so much information caught in my net and feelings that I need to sort through. I'm overwhelmed and can't think straight. By morning, though, I'm rested and can logically think about what I experienced the day before. My net is refreshed. We all walk around with a net around us. You can imagine a net with strings going this way and connecting each other this way. It lets some things pass through, but collects some other things. When we have a moment and can reflect, we clean out that net. We can assess what's been caught, throw away the things we don't need, and keep the more desirable moments as memories. This net we walk around with every day collects the things we see and hear. It can collect the feelings off of others, and it captures ideas that we interact with. At any point in the day, we can assess what is caught in our net. We might find a dark and a negative interaction that's not so great to carry around. There might be a piece that we need to learn from that moment. We can keep that, but then unburden ourselves with the rest. We also might find a very lovely moment that we want to keep for a long time to inspire us or to make us smile. Every day, we pick through our experiences and process what we've been through. In times of crisis, though, we lose our understanding of what we should be keeping and what we can throw away. When we get a chance to reel in our net, we think, this person said it's no big deal, but if they're wrong, I need to keep this and hold on to it for longer. Did you hear the hook? If. If is a hook that is very hard to untangle from our nets. If hooks in unnecessary information and weighs us down. Our nets become cluttered with information, and it becomes harder and harder to identify the stuff we can toss and the stuff we should keep. The weight of living with this gunked up net can cause all sorts of personal and social atrocities. We have seen this happen already. When news of the virus began to spread, Chinese restaurants saw a sharp decrease in guests. This came from hearing reports that the virus had started in food in China. And the public made the assumption that all Chinese food was dangerous. The fear of the new virus gunked up our nets, and we could not tap into a reasonable response. And so fearfully, some avoided Chinese restaurants. That fear quickly became fear of anyone of Chinese descent, and racism against that population is still growing today. Even though new information is out there, the old gunk is still caught in some people's nets. This is why it is so important for us to pay attention to how much we are carrying around and what we are letting get caught in our nets. We can't avoid all wrong information, and sometimes we won't even know it's wrong until later. But when we consistently clean out the gunk, we give truth a chance to survive. We may need others to help us sort through the information. We have to talk to others about the different reports we are hearing. I've been on a number of Facebook groups and group texts, listening to others and asking questions. I'll admit it stings a little when something that I said, that I thought was right, turns out to be wrong or outdated. It's hard to not become cynical and defend my original comment, but in the end, I am not a doctor and I am not a virologist, and I need to stay open to hearing the changing information. I need to clean out the gunk that is in my net and make room for more useful information. This will help me lessen my fear and stay the person God has asked me to be. Fear is not going to help me be a blessing to the world. I think we are all walking around with very heavy nets this week. If hooks have gotten tangled in deep, and we need to begin the process of detaching the excessive information, that process begins with asking, what are you afraid of? And do you have faith? Before my trip to Kenya last month, I had some fears. I knew I was very excited, but I also felt a little afraid. I have a lot of experience with anxiety and fear, so I cleared some time, sat down to reflect on what I was feeling. I realized that my fear was located more around my parents and my cat. I was afraid my parents would get stuck with my student loan debt if the worst had happened. And I was afraid that my cat would be sad because I was going to be gone for 2 weeks. Once I realized this, I knew what I could do. I looked into my life insurance, took out some travel insurance, and bought a camera that spits out treats so that I can log in from abroad and see my cat. My fear disappeared after my action. I asked myself, what am I afraid of, and found things I could do and I could control to dissipate that fear. I do this a lot because I also know what I have faith in. God has gifted me with a very good gut instinct. It has saved me from multiple dangerous situations. The problem is that my gut feels a lot like my anxiety. So I have learned that I need to stop and ask myself if the strong feeling that I'm having is my fear or my faith. It's hard to remember our faith in crisis. It's hard to calmly wake up Jesus and ask for assistance. We usually end up acting like the disciples and screaming, "Where are you? What are you doing? Are you asleep?" But there is so much power in our faith. That is the thing that Jesus wants the disciples to realize they had control over. They wasted too much time sitting in their fear when all they had to do was wake Jesus up. If they had faith that he was who he said he was and the things that they had seen him do, they would have known that he could calm the wind and the sea. The thing the disciples could do, the action that they could take before resorting to fear, was to engage their faith and get Jesus involved. We need to ask ourselves, what are we afraid of? Once that is identified, I think we will be very pleased by the variety of options we have to take action against the fears that have been stirred up this week. Some of those actions will feel like we're doing nothing. Working from home. Watching worship from the comfort of your couch. But for this moment, in these circumstances, those are courageous actions to take. Jesus is asking us, what are you afraid of? So that we can hone in on the action that we can take. If you are afraid of getting sick, there are bullet point lists all over the internet about how to keep yourself well. Washing our hands, wiping surfaces around you, keeping social distance, not touching your face, staying home. There are things that if we're afraid, there are things we can stock up on just in case we do get sick. Cough medicine, fever reducers, Vicks, soup, Kleenex. If you are afraid of a loved one getting sick, you can buy these items for them. Call them more often. Encourage others to stay away and to stay at home. If you are afraid of your favorite small business not making it through the economic downturn, you can buy a gift card from that company now and use it later. You can call your representative and encourage them to enact some safety measures. If you are afraid the students in Pontiac at our Alcott Elementary School will go hungry, then I have an action item for you. We have started, actually yesterday, an emergency food pantry out of First Presbyterian Church in Pontiac. We have bags on your way out and grocery lists that as you go out and buy for yourself, you can also buy for those who are in the most desperate need at this time. You can bring those bags back to us, and we will take them to Pontiac to make sure that every kid gets food. If you are self-quarantined from home, you can give to the cause, and I'll go out and buy the stuff with your money. Fear tells us that we have no control, that there is nothing we can do, but in fact, we have a lot of control in this storm. But if we just sit in our fear and never identify what the source is, we will feel out of control. Our net will weigh us down until we don't even have the energy to take action. What are you afraid of? And what do you have faith in? The most powerful action item we have available to us is our faith. The most impactful thing we can do in this crisis is produce love, not fear. 1 John chapter 4, verses 17 through 19 say, God is love. When we take up permanent residence in a life of love, we live in God and God lives in us. This way, love has the run of the house, becomes at home, and matures in us so that we are free of worry on Judgment Day. Our standing in the world is identical with Christ. There is no room in love for fear. Well-formed love banishes fear, since fear is crippling, a fearful life, fear of death, fear of judgment, fear is in one not yet fully formed in love. We are going to love. Love and be loved. First, we were loved. Now, we love. Love is the power we wield in any crisis. When Jesus wakes up in the middle of a terrifying storm and calmly cares for the people around him, the disciples are in awe. They have no idea where he's gotten the strength. They ask themselves, who is this guy? How is he not freaking out? Jesus has faith in God and in his power, a power that we all have access to. We have the power to push out fear, push out the fear that's in us, and push out the fear that's rampant in the world. That power is rooted in love. Our love listens. Our love takes action. That love needs to have a free path to the world, though. And a gunked up net will act more like a shield Sure, it will keep the hurtful information out, but it will also prevent our love from getting into the world. Take care of your nets in the coming weeks. Help those around you who show signs of a gunked up net, those who are fearful, to clear their nets too. Care for the people around you calmly and courageously. Social distancing does not mean isolation. Call friends and family more often. Ask those who need to self-quarantine if they need any help. In these ways, our love will cast out fear, and our standing in this storm will be identical to Christ. We're now going to take a moment to sit with the message, the sermon on your heart. Please sit and reflect on what you've learned today.